I think we all understand that some people are famous and well known because of their own actions. And other people are famous not because of anything that they have done, but because of their association with people who are famous and well known. We would never have heard of Marcia Clark, Christopher Darden, and Judge Lance Ito were it not for the O.J. Simpson trial. But those individuals are well known because of their association with that famous fella in that famous criminal trial so many years ago. Pontius Pilate, the coward who condemned Jesus, is famous not because of his own actions, but because of his association, his very brief contact with Jesus, perhaps about 3 hours. But Pilate is known to us because of his contact with the most famous person that the world has ever known. I'm kind of heavily weighted on the bad guys. We're going to get to some good guys. But we want to do basically the same kind of thing that we did in the previous hour. I want to talk with you or remind you about what we know about Pilate and then what we can learn from Pilate. We know his name. It was Pontius Pilate. We know that he was a Gentile. The very fact that he was a Roman procurator or prefect would tell us that he was a Gentile, but his own words in the midst of Jesus' trial confirms this fact. John writes in John 18, beginning in verse 33, "Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus, and said to him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' Jesus answered him, 'Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?' And then Pilate asked the question, 'Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?'" The very fact that he asked, "Am I a Jew?" tells us that he wasn't a Jew. He was probably an Italian-born Roman citizen. And, as I've already mentioned, he was the Roman governor of Judea from about AD 26 to 36 or 37 during the reign of Tiberius Caesar. Have very little information about his life up to that point. He likely served in various military posts before Tiberius appointed him as governor over Judea. He was the 5th Roman prefect of Judea. His headquarters was in Caesarea Maritima, and from that place he governed both Judea and Samaria. But he was accountable to the Roman governor above him in the hierarchy who lived in Syria. He's mentioned in secular sources, the Jewish historian Josephus, and then Philo, and the Roman historian Tacitus mention Pilate by name. And interestingly enough, in 1961, an inscription was discovered in the ruins there in Caesarea that mentions Pilate by name. It's the only occurrence known occurrence of his name in any ancient inscription. Kathy and I were fortunate enough to be able to make a trip to Israel in 2016, and then I was able to go back earlier this year, and I saw a replica of this inscription there in Caesarea Maritima, and then I saw the actual inscription in the Israel Museum sometime later. We know that Pilate was married, because Matthew tells us that while he was sitting on his judgment seat during Jesus' trial, his wife sent to him saying, "Have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him." Secular sources tell us that her name was Claudia Procula. And then we know from secular history that Pilate offended the Jews on more than one occasion. He first offended them when he brought Roman standards with images of the emperor into Jerusalem. Previous prefects had not dared to do anything like that. But when Pilate did that, the Jews sent a delegation to Caesarea pleading with him for 5 days to remove those images. And on the sixth day, Pilate sent soldiers into the crowd, and at the signal, they drew their swords and they cut the Jews to pieces. And the Jews fell down and they exposed. Wait a minute, I said that wrong. At the signal, they were supposed to draw their swords and cut the Jews to pieces. And when they were about to do that, the Jews fell down before them and exposed their necks because they would rather die than transgress their law. And Pilate, wanting to avoid a revolution, decided to get rid of the images. A second conflict occurred when Pilate took funds from the sacred treasury to build aqueducts. And when Pilate visited Jerusalem, his actions caused such an uproar among the Jews that he mixed his own soldiers there among the crowd, disguised as civilians, and at his signal, they beat the protesters with clubs. And many of the Jews died as a result of their beating, or they were trampled by the crowd. The Jewish writer Philo described an incident where Pilate, in an attempt to honor Tiberius, placed shields bearing his name in the former palace of Herod in Jerusalem. Now, Pilate thought, by placing these shields not in the temple, but in the palace of Herod, everything would be okay. But it wasn't. And the leading Jews, along with 4 of Herod's sons, requested that he remove the shields. And when he refused, they appealed to Tiberius. And he was infuriated, and he ordered Pilate to remove the shields and place them in the temple of Augustus at Caesarea. We also know that on one occasion he killed Jewish worshipers in the Jewish temple. Luke tells us about that in Luke chapter 13 when he writes in verse 1, "There were present at that season some who told him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices." This may have happened, or quite likely happened, at the Passover. I understand that's the only time when the people slaughtered their own sacrifices. We don't have any confirmation of this in secular sources, but it certainly matches the portrait that secular history paints of Pilate. He was cruel and he was merciless toward the Jewish people. Now, all this means that he wasn't especially fond of the Jews, and they certainly weren't very fond of him. That Jewish writer, Philo, references a letter written by Agrippa I that describes Pilate as inflexible, stubborn, and cruel, and it depicts his term of service as marked by venality, violence, thefts, assaults of the people, abusive behavior, frequent executions of untried persons, endless and savage ferocity. He was a bad guy. We know that for some reason, for a time, there was enmity between Pilate and Herod Antipas. Because Luke tells us after Pilate, when he learned that Jesus was from Galilee, then he sent him off to Herod, and Herod sent him back. Luke says in Luke 23:12, from that very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. And then, of course, we know that he presided over Jesus' Roman trial. When Jesus was tried by the Jewish Sanhedrin, they convicted him, quote unquote, of blasphemy. But they couldn't execute Jesus. That power had been taken away from them by the Romans. And so that's why they brought Jesus to Pilate early that Friday morning. But they knew that Pilate wouldn't execute Jesus for the charge of blasphemy. So they trumped up other charges. Luke tells us about that in Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 1. He writes, "And the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, 'We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ a king.' Then Pilate asked him, saying, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' He answered him and said, 'It is as you say.' So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, 'I find no fault in this man.' But they were the more fierce, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place.'" The first charge that they made against Jesus was blatantly false. Jesus had taught the Jewish people to pay taxes to Caesar. No doubt you remember that on one occasion they came to Jesus and they asked him, "Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar?" And I'm sure you remember what Jesus said, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's." Their second charge against Jesus was a misrepresentation. It's true that Jesus did claim to be king, but he was a king over a spiritual kingdom. He was no threat to Pilate or Caesar. No doubt you'll recall that when Pilate questioned Jesus and he asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." There's something else that we know about Pilate, and that is that he repeatedly declared Jesus' innocence during the trial. In fact, if my count is correct, he proclaimed Jesus' innocence 5 different times. I didn't know that until I kind of looked into that in some detail, looking at a harmony of the Gospels. He declared that Jesus was innocent after his first conversation with Jesus, and after Jesus was returned from Herod, and then when he brought Jesus out to the Jews, and then after he offered to punish Jesus and release him, and then finally when Pilate washed his hands of the matter. Five times he declared his innocence. And then I'm impressed by the fact that Pilate repeatedly tried to release Jesus. Once he offered to chastise Jesus and then release him. Luke says in Luke 23:16, I will therefore chastise him and release him. Then after he had Jesus scourged and presented to the Jews wearing that purple robe and crown of thorns, I believe he did all that in an effort to gain their sympathy. I think he presented that pitiful presentation of a man beaten and bleeding, thinking, oh, surely that'll be enough for them. They'll be satisfied. They'll let this poor fellow go. And then, of course, he gave the Jews a choice between Barabbas, a notorious prisoner, and Jesus. There's not a doubt in my mind that Pilate thought with a choice like that, that they would surely choose Barabbas for execution, not Jesus. But then we also know that, well, I didn't keep up with myself. He delivered Jesus to be crucified. And folks, Pilate had good reason to release Jesus. In fact, he had several good reasons to release Jesus. He had the power and the authority to release him or condemn him. In fact, that's what he says in John 19, verse 10. When Jesus refused to answer his questions at first, Pilate got frustrated and he asked him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? What that means, folks, is that Pilate was in a position to save Jesus. Not everybody was in that kind of a position, but he certainly was. And then he also knew, Matthew tells us in Matthew 27:18, that they had handed Jesus over because of envy. That wasn't Pilate's first rodeo. He knew what was going on. He knew what motivated those Jewish leaders. And then, as I've already said, after talking with Jesus and observing Jesus, he was convinced that he was innocent. And he declared that five times, as I've already mentioned. And then in addition to all of that, when he sent Jesus off to Herod Antipas and Herod questioned Jesus, he sent him back and he proclaimed his innocence. And then his wife warned him to have nothing to do with that righteous man. Usually it doesn't take husbands too long to learn that they need to listen to their wives. We're not always the best at that. But Pilate's wife had warned him. And then in addition to all of that, Pilate had Roman soldiers at his disposal to quell any violence that might have erupted because the Jews were not happy with his decision had he released Jesus. He was in a position to take care of all of that. And then he also knew that if he acceded to the Jews' demand, he would wind up releasing a notorious criminal who was guilty of the same kind of crimes that they had charged against Jesus. Let me tell you, folks, Pilate had several good reasons to release Jesus, but when push came to shove, Pilate caved in to political pressure out of self-interest. John tells us in John 19, verse 12, from then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." And folks, Pilate just wasn't strong enough to resist that kind of pressure. Secular history tells us that he was dismissed as governor about AD 36 or 37. He had slaughtered, or his soldiers had slaughtered, a bunch of Samaritans, and they complained to Vitellius, and so he was replaced. The church historian Eusebius says that he ultimately committed suicide. Now, that is not confirmed by any other source, so I don't know if that's actually what happened or not. But think with me now about what we can learn from Pilate. And the first point that I'm going to make is a point that I made in the last hour, and that is that sinners are responsible for their own sins. And since I've already made that point, I'll not belabor it. But God didn't make Pilate do what he did. He, like Judas, was responsible for his own actions. And we are responsible for our actions as well. But a second lesson that I think we learn from Pilate's story is that saying the right things about Jesus is not enough. We must do the right thing with Jesus. Pilate said the right things about Jesus. He pronounced his innocence, as I've already said more than once, 5 different times, but Pilate didn't do the right thing with Jesus. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul makes an interesting statement about Jesus and Pilate that highlights the significant difference between the two men. He says in verse 13, "I urge you in the sight of God, who gives life to all things, and before Christ Jesus, who witnessed the good confession before Pontius Pilate." I want you to think about that statement for a moment. And once again, let me remind you that Pilate said the right things about Jesus, but he wasn't willing to do the right thing with Jesus because it was going to cost him more than he wanted to pay. Jesus said the right things about himself, and he did the right things even when it cost him everything. And the question that I think we need to ask ourselves is, are we going to be like Pilate, or are we going to be like Jesus? Saying the right things without doing the right things is not going to save anybody. It was our Lord himself who said in Matthew 7, beginning in verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." He goes on to say, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then Jesus says, I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. There's another lesson that we learn, and that is that trying to do the right thing is not the same thing as actually doing the right thing. I really believe Pilate tried to do the right thing. Luke tells us that he wanted to release Jesus. Chapter 23, verse 20, Pilate therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But Pilate didn't only want to release Jesus, he actually decided to release Jesus. Peter told a Jewish audience in Acts chapter 3 and verse 13, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus, whom you delivered up and denied in the presence of Pilate when he was determined to let him go. Now, I think we need to appreciate that. He didn't just want to release Jesus. He decided to release Jesus, and he tried to release Jesus in various ways. And we've already mentioned these. He offered to chastise Jesus and then release him. He gave the Jews the choice between Barabbas, a notorious prisoner, and Jesus. But folks, although he tried to do the right thing, he didn't do the right thing. Knowing what's right and wanting to do what's right and even trying to do what's right is not the same thing as actually doing what's right. I appreciated an observation that David Tomley made in an article on Pilate in Christianity Magazine many years ago. He asked the question, what about the neighbor next door who studies the Bible with you and learns the truth, yet refuses to turn away from a worldly lifestyle? What about the husband who has attended church with his wife for years and has been encouraged by his wife and his children to become a Christian, yet refuses to be baptized because his parents would not understand? What about the Christian who carelessly drifts back into sin and has been encouraged by numerous brethren to repent, yet refuses because of the personal cost attached to the change that would be required? And what about the Christian who knows what is right, but is more concerned about political correctness than genuine righteousness? And then David said, it is the way of Pilate. Isn't he right about that? It's not enough for us to try to do the right thing. We've got to do the right thing. We've all heard that old adage that says the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that we've got to live a perfectly sinless life to please God. I'm not saying that if we mess up, there's no hope for us. But I'm saying we've got to do more than just try. We must do. And yes, our doing will be imperfect, but God has a remedy for that. But listen to what John says in 1 John 3, verse 7. Little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous just as he is righteous. There's some practicing righteousness that we've got to do. Another lesson that we learn from Pilate is we just can't remain neutral when it comes to Jesus. He tried to do that. In the very beginning, when the Jews first brought Jesus to Pilate, he tried to get them to take care of it. John tells us in John 18:31 that Pilate said, "You take him and judge him according to your law." He just didn't want to deal with that hot potato. And then, as I've already mentioned, when he learned that Jesus was from Galilee, he sent Jesus to Herod. Well, let Herod take care of that. And then in the end, he washed his hands and declared his innocence, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it." And while Pilate may have thought that he succeeded in remaining neutral, we all know that he failed in that. He wasn't neutral. You just can't be neutral about Jesus. You can't play both ends against the middle as far as Jesus is concerned. And Jesus himself told us that in Matthew 12, verse 30. He said, "He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad." And may I remind you that a decision not to decide is a decision. And it's a decision against Jesus. Another lesson that we learn from Pilate is that fear is a bad reason for not doing the right thing. John writes in John 19, verse 7 and 8, "The Jews answered him, 'We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God.' Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid." How many times have you done the wrong thing, not so much because you really wanted to do the wrong thing, but because you were afraid of doing the right thing? Fear is not a good reason for not doing what we should do. Even if we have to stand up to a lot of people. And that's where Pilate found himself. Matthew says in Matthew 27, verse 20, "But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask for Barnabas and destroy Jesus." Fear is not a good reason for not doing what we should do, even if the other side is insistent and persistent. Luke says in Luke 23, verse 23, "But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified, and the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed." I don't know if the name Joyce Myers means anything to you. She's one of the televangelists that you may have seen on the TV. And there's not very much that she would say that I would agree with. But I do agree with this statement. She said, "When you need to make a decision, don't let your emotions vote." Another lesson that we learn from Pilate is that Jesus tries those who try him. It's certainly true that Jesus was on trial when he stood before Pilate, but there was another trial going on as well. Pilate was being tried by Jesus. His character and his convictions were being tested as never before. And throughout that trial, Pilate asked a number of questions that were good questions, questions that really needed to be asked. "Are you the King of the Jews? Where are you from? What then shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? What is truth?" Those were good questions. They needed to be asked. Especially that question, "What then shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ?" That's a question that every man needs to answer in light of Jesus' claims and his sinless life and his miracles. Let me tell you, folks, when somebody makes the kind of claims that Jesus made and lives the kind of life that Jesus lived and does the kind of things that Jesus did, you've got to make a decision about a fellow like that. Was he a liar? Was he a lunatic? Was it just a legend? Or is he the Lord of heaven and earth? And what you do with Jesus will determine what he does with you. And then finally, Pilate's story should remind us that an inadequate response to sin is worthless. Like Judas, I think Pilate tried in insufficient ways to make up for his cowardice. He washed his hands, declaring that he wasn't responsible. And then in the second place, he refused to change the inscription that he had put on the cross. John says in John 19, beginning in verse 19, "Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, 'Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews.' And when the Jewish leaders saw that inscription, they came to Pilate and they said, 'Do not write 'The King of the Jews,' but 'He said, I am the King of the Jews.'" And do you remember how Pilate responded? He said, "What I have written, I have written." And then he gave Jesus' body to Joseph of Arimathea for burial. I believe he was trying to make up for his cowardice. But it was too little, too late. When Pilate delivered Jesus to be crucified, he no doubt believed that he had made the wisest decision under the circumstance. His political career was still intact. His reputation with the people, though certainly tainted, was preserved. In their eyes, he may have been the hero for the moment, but folks, he sold his soul for eternity. And because of his cowardly act in condemning Jesus, he is both pitied and scorned. Will we learn the lessons that we need to learn from Pilate, the coward who condemned Jesus? Thank you for your very kind attention.